The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. We have been discussing flatworms, and on our last program had talked about the flukes and had spent most of the time discussing something of the problems of the subject of parasitism. Did God create parasites? Did they evolve? And there are areas that there simply is not observable information about. And so whether you're a creationist or an evolutionist, you are put into the position of trying to come up with a position that is consistent with what is observable and consistent with what Scripture is. We want to talk on this program a little bit about the kinds of parasites, the kinds of flukes that are found in nature. The nervous system of flukes is pretty much similar to the nervous system for planarians. That is, there are two ganglia. The textbooks usually refer to them as cerebral ganglia. They're found up toward the anterior end of the body. And then there are longitudinal cords that run down through the body with peripheral nerves going off from those. So the nervous system is similar between planarians and flukes. And there are some others, but there are also some tremendous differences. Most of these organisms are going to have suckers. Some of them will have a sucker at the anterior end of the body, known as an oral sucker. Some of them are going to have ventral suckers and so on. And again, it's not my intent to spend a lot of time on the details of all of this. But we did mention that many of the flukes are going to have numbers of hosts. Let's talk a little bit about the variety of flukes by virtue of the fact that there are so many of the world's population that find themselves wrestling with the problems that these flukes cause. There are blood flukes. These belong to a genus that is known as Schistosoma. Blood flukes, in my mind, are probably one of the parasites that there really is no good solution to. I would hesitate to guess at the number of people in the world who are victims of blood flukes, schistosomes. I know that it is at the level of hundreds of millions. I can find information that puts that figure at 200 million, but it's rather out of date. In my mind, it could be double that now. In this country, we really don't worry about most parasites particularly, because they're not common. And the parasites generally are not a problem in our nation for a number of reasons. If you're going to figure out how to handle parasites, how to control them, how do you do that? Well, the best thing to do is simply to determine the complete life cycle if you can. And that has been done for a number of parasites, including the blood flukes. And then you decide, all right, we can go to this particular stage of the organism and destroy that stage, or we can go to this particular host. One solution to being sure that no one would ever die of schistosomiasis again would simply be to kill everybody on the earth. But I'm not sure that's a real good solution. So are there stages in the life cycle that are more amenable to control than others? Can you control the snails or the other mollusks, or is it easier to control the fish stage or whatever? And so this simply is part of the consideration that is involved with the job of the parasitologist. But for schistosomes, there is no answer to the problem of schistosomiasis presently. And it is in the reason for that is tied up with the efforts to help many of the underdeveloped nations in the world. Now, if you'll give some thought to this, what is a continuing major difficulty for many people on the face of the earth? And for many of them, it simply is a matter of food. When you begin to examine why this is, often it simply has to do with drought conditions. There are areas of Africa, for example, that have experienced continuing droughts for several decades. This simply means that water is a problem. So if your desire is to help these folks be able to feed themselves, then one of the first considerations you're going to give thought to is, how can we store water, provide a basis of water that would allow them to have access to that all through the year as they grow their crops? Now, the schistosomes, one of the stages of the schistosomes, and again, I try not to bore you with too much technical jargon, but a stage known as a cercaria. These things are free living in water. So when the desire to provide ponds, lakes, irrigation canals, which are necessary to provide water for a nation, so you do that. But in doing that, you have guaranteed the increase in the human contact with water that contains infective stages of these parasites. If you are in a nation that has a continuing drought, all of a sudden, here's a great big lake there for you, or an irrigation ditch. What are you going to do? Well, obviously, you're going to begin to use it. You're going to drink from it. You're going to wash clothes in it. You're going to do all kinds of things in it. And the fact is that it is possible for a person simply to ride in a boat across one of these ponds that contain the infective stages of schistosomiasis and trail their hand in the water. And these cercariae can make their way through the skin, and then the parasite is inside the human body capable of continuing that infection. So while the idea of providing water is a sensible one, along with that then comes the increased possibility of contact between humans and schistosomes. So, as is often true, what seems to be a good answer, and in fact is, really provides some difficulties that no one had foreseen, especially. And the fact is, there really is not. There are not any altogether suitable methods of handling this. One of the ways of handling the parasites, obviously, is to kill the parasite once it gets in the human body. But in many cases, including this one, the chemicals that are used are very toxic. And the method often is to give small amounts of these over a long period of time. And there are inherent difficulties with that. If you are looking at a population that is not convinced that there are really these little microscopic bad things in the water that they have been drinking and using all their lives, and you give them a pill and tell them, well, you take this every day for the next month, that's going to handle that. They may or may not do that. But the fact is, the amount of chemical necessary to kill the parasite is sometimes less than the amount that's necessary to kill the human being. And although there has been tremendous research done here about that, it still is a problem. And by the way, to any of you that are believers and have some interest in trying to determine a lifetime occupation that would be useful, parasitology is certainly one of these. There are a variety of parasites, and this is an area that you could devote your lifetime to research in, to develop cures and helps and preventions for these things. And while some areas of research simply provide gadgets or information or technological help of one kind or another, this is an area where there can be some immediate help to human beings. And for that reason, I think it is one that believers ought to consider, believers who are interested in biology ought to consider very carefully as a possibility, because there certainly are unbelievable opportunities that are not only present, but very critical for many parts of the world. By the way, those cercaria, when they invade the skin, produce a condition sometimes referred to as dermatitis, that is referred to as swimmer's itch. So you go jump in that nice new irrigation ditch and you may come up with some inhabitants that you really hadn't wanted before that. There are lung flukes, paragonimus flukes that are critical in some areas. There's not a figure that comes to my mind. Say, well, how many trematodes are there? I really don't know. At least several dozen that are of immense importance as far as affecting human beings. Most of them many of them at least, do not necessarily kill the host, but they simply are debilitating. If you have a population of parasites that your body is supplying food for, you're going to feel differently from the way you would feel if you didn't have them. And particularly in warm areas of the world and underdeveloped nations, it is not unusual for a single person to have two or three different organisms in the body. And I promise you, if you had that condition in your body, you'd not be full of fizz and vinegar all the time either. You'd be very lethargic, and it'd be very difficult for you even to carry out those activities that are necessary to provide food to eat. So we sit sometimes in our nation and really don't have any comprehension about some of the problems that others have. There are two or three, well, more than that perhaps, things that we do routinely that help prevent parasites from being a problem here. I recall years ago giving a one-question final exam in parasitology. I told the students I wanted them to imagine that they were in a brand new nation that had all of the parasites that we had studied during the semester. And I wanted them then to write out a description of a plan that would prevent any of those parasites from affecting human beings, to do it with the fewest steps possible, the fewest processes possible, and indicate which parasite each step would handle. I don't think when they read the question to start with, they understood how extensive that was. But we do routinely. So, for example, we usually handle human waste effectively through sanitary sewage disposal. That prevents a great deal of difficulty. This eliminates the possibility of a number of parasites that affect others in the world from being a major problem here. And when the parasite names are mentioned, most Americans have never even heard the names of these parasites. Well, be happy about that. That is one of the blessings that we have simply because of the standard of living and the procedures that we have here in our own country.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.